All right, so this is Biblical Stewardship, Module 4, and today we're going to be talking about debt, usury, and everybody's favorite thing, taxes. But before we begin our discussion on that, I want to revisit Joshua's question about the definition of compassion that he had for last week and whether emotion is involved in compassion. So here are some definitions that I found in various secular and biblical dictionaries of compassion. A feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another who is stricken by misfortune, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate the suffering. Another one is to have mercy, to feel sympathy, and to have pity. To show pity, to love, and to show mercy. Compassion is a desire to free others from their suffering. And finally, to feel passion with someone, to enter sympathetically into their sorrow and pain. So those are some definitions of compassion. Again, some from secular dictionaries and others from biblical dictionaries. But I believe emotions do play a part in compassion, but one's acts of compassion are not driven solely or primarily necessarily by emotions, but rather by a heart for God and for His creation. So as we see someone suffering, we want to, our heart goes out to them because they are a creation of God, and where we can help, we want to do that. And so maybe that helps clarify some things. And Joshua may have some other thoughts, I don't know. But let's get into debt and usury. So as we take a look at the word here, we'll go through the scripture as we have and talk a little bit about each one and the implications of it. Also, before we leave, just in case I forget or I'm not quick about it, I have the outline for, or the handout for Module 5 here, which will start next week. Jay Brown will be starting Module 5, and that's thinking about the future. And so if you need a hard copy, if you didn't get a copy of the electronic version of this, feel free to take one of these before you leave. And this way you'll be able to read through the scripture for Jay's teaching for next week. So debt and usury begin in Exodus 22, 25 through 27. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you are not to act as a creditor to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, you are to return it to him before the sun sets. For that is his only covering. It is his cloak for his body. What else shall he sleep in? And it shall come about that when he cries out to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious. So the principle here that I'd like you to think about is that interest or surety on the loan should not be used as a form of oppression against the poor. So in this particular case, the Israelites were charged by God not to charge interest if they lend to another Israelite. If you borrowed or you took someone's cloak, you were to give it back to them so that they would not suffer in the evening, or they would have a covering over them. So again, from a debt and usury perspective, particular usury perspective, we should not be, as Christians, we should not be oppressing someone through debt or usury. Somebody have Leviticus 25, 36, and 37? Okay, I'll read it. Do not take usurious interest from him, but revere your God, that your countrymen may live with you. You shall not give him your silver at interest, nor your food for gain. So it is unbiblical to charge an excessive amount of interest on a loan, especially to the poor. Deuteronomy 15:6.
Whoa. Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you.
So as Christians, we've learned over the course of time that as stewards of all that God has provided, we have a responsibility. And as a steward, Christians may lend according to the needs of the people. Borrowing money places a burden on the debtor and should be avoided wherever possible. Now, we're going to talk a little bit later about, you know, is it that it is not unbiblical to borrow money, but we need to do it in a particular way, with a particular mindset. Deuteronomy 23:19.
You shall not charge interest to your countrymen, interest on money, food, or anything that may be loaned at interest.
So again, we're not to take advantage of the poor. Assistance should be given without interest when possible, and especially when it's providing for basic needs. If someone is unable to put food on the table and they need to borrow money, it would not be appropriate to, if you chose to lend them the money, it would not be appropriate to charge them interest on that money when it's for a basic need. Ecclesiastes 5:5 says, it is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. So in the context there in your handout, it says, there is, however, a place for making resolution, vows before God. The challenge that comes through a sermon or a book and, above all, from Scripture itself should be clinched by definite commitment. The same follow-up is vital if in time of trouble we make a promise to do something if only God will deliver us. If we do not carry it through, it would be better to have made no commitment at all. We must not draw back and make an excuse about not having understood what we were required to do. This can only arouse God's displeasure, and he may well take away what we were hoping to keep for ourselves. So Christians who commit to a payment are to honor that commitment. So if you take out a mortgage, if you take out a car loan, if you take out some other kind of loan, and you make a commitment, or you borrow money from an individual, and you have set up terms and conditions under which that will be repaid, it is our responsibility as Christians to make sure that we honor that commitment. Psalm 37:21. Somebody have that?
The wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives.
So God requires that we act justly and render to others what is owed. It is sinful for those that are able to withhold or deny the payment of just debts. So if you're able to pay and you don't, that even complicates it more and makes it even worse than if you're destitute and you can't repay, which is a problem. But if you can and you choose not to, that is wicked. Proverbs 13:11 says, wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. Again, looking at the context there, and the context here is from the Expositor's Bible Commentary. Steady and wise investment produces prosperity. This is a warning against wild speculation. Little by little, hand by hand, stresses the diligent activity and the gradual growth of one's investment. But if the riches come quickly through some unfounded or dishonest means, one could lose them just as easily. So, as you choose to make an investment and you hear about this fantastic opportunity that's going to return your money 10 times over in 2 months, be suspicious, right? If it's too good to be true, if it sounds too good, it's probably not true. So again, little by little, hand by hand, steady plotting, reasonable risk, and what's reasonable for one person may be different for someone else. As those of us who are getting older, We cannot take the same amount of risk that those of you who are much younger can, because we have such little time in our investments. And so you move more from a more risky situation to a less risky situation over the course of time generally in your investments. But the principle is seeking to benefit quickly from highly speculative investments that pay a high rate of return is not as beneficial or as wise as realizing the gradual growth on an investment. So again, steady plotting. Proverbs 22:7.
The rich rules over the poor and the borrower becomes the lender's slave.
Yeah. Poverty makes people dependent on others. The poor and borrowers become subservient to the rich. So you are somewhat of a servant to the people that you borrow money from, and are subservient to them, in that they kind of have you over the barrel, that you owe them something. And so the goal here is over time is to decrease your debt more and more so that you are not indebted to anyone, and it gives you that freedom to do other things with the resources that God has provided you, whether it's time, talent, or finances, and therefore you're just able to make a bigger impact into the kingdom. Proverbs 22:26 says, "Do not be among those who give pledges, among those who become grantors for debts." So we are not to serve as a grantor of a debt unless you're in a financial position to do that and willing to assume full responsibility for the debt should the primary debtor default. So when your kids ask you to co-sign for a car, first of all, are you in a financial position to do that? And second of all, if they default, are you willing to take on the responsibility? If either one of those is not true, then you probably should not be a guarantor on the debt. Proverbs 28:8 says, "He who increases his wealth by interest and usury gathers it for him who is gracious to the poor." So again, we are not to amass wealth as Christians by unjust means. So when we do things that are extremely speculative or maybe even not technically legal just for the sake of gaining wealth, it's not a good testimony to our walk. Luke 6:30-35.
"Give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men."
So we are called to respond to the needs of others, and it is acceptable to expect repayment if promised by the debtor. So if somebody says, "Hey, would you loan me this and I'll repay you," it's okay to expect that you're going to get repaid, but whether payment is made or not, fellowship between the two parties should not be damaged. That is extremely difficult, especially when it comes to family and close friends. And so one thing that Marie and I have done is if someone asks to borrow money from us, if we choose to do it, we do it with the understanding that we may not get repaid, and that's okay. If that is not okay, we don't loan the money. So if we can't do it with a conscience that says, okay, they're in a pretty good position and we think we're going to get repaid. But if we don't, then it's okay. You need to make that decision before you go into the situation, not wait until it happens and then all of a sudden it's a surprise to you and now fellowship is broken or there's hard feelings one way or the other and it becomes a very difficult situation. I've seen this tear up close friendships and even families. And so be very cautious when you lend to think through all the particulars that need to be thought through before you do lend someone money. The reverse is true when you borrow. You know, what if I can't repay? What is going to happen? And think through that as well. Romans 13, 7 through 8. Says, render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. In the context section, it says, while it is appropriate for a believer to incur debt, to be perpetually in debt is not a good testimony, and to refuse to make good one's obligations is outrageous. Pretty strong words, but true nonetheless. So again, it is appropriate at times to incur debt, but to be over your head all the time because of poor choices that you made is a bad testimony, number one. It's poor biblical stewardship, and refusing to make good your obligations, as the author of that commentary said, is outrageous. Hebrews 13:5. Someone have that one? Okay.
Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you.
So covetousness and the love of money, as we talked about before, are sinful and they do become idols in that case. And so we must remain pure in this area. Contentment is a big issue when it comes to debt. So are you going into debt because you're not content with what you have? If that's the case, that's probably making a poor choice. But again, I don't want you to walk away thinking that any kind of debt is unbiblical, because that is not the case. But in summary, Christians must be cautious when incurring debt. They must ensure that the terms of the debt are fully understood and they do not become a slave to the debt or get themselves in a position where they are unable to repay the debt. If a loan is made to another person, Christians must not take advantage of the poor or charge a high interest rate on the loan. Above all, we must resist the love of money as it becomes the root of evil and serves as an idol. So on your little handout there, just kind of recapping debt and usury. Debt impacts our stewardship. Whether you repay or not, it does impact our stewardship. The more you borrow, the less you have to do other things for the kingdom. Limited debt is acceptable when approached biblically. So there are times when it is acceptable. What would be some acceptable debt, in your opinion?
A place to live,
transportation. Okay. So, a place to live. How do you decide what kind of place to live in?
You go by what your budget is, what you make every month, and
okay.
Okay.
And so how much, you have to decide how much of your budget is going to be spent towards housing, right? So if you're in a position where you're not making a great deal of money, and housing in the area. If you lived in San Diego or California somewhere, housing is really expensive and you made $30,000 a year, you probably, you may not even be able to afford a house. But if you're spending 80-90% of your income on your housing, that's probably not a good decision. I remember the first church we went to when we moved to Phoenix. When we got there, the church was in significant debt. The previous pastor wanted to build a mega church. They had sold bonds, and the church was in debt like $3 million. And the pastor left, and everything. The congregation was probably a couple thousand people at the time. People left, and here we were holding the bag on this debt. And so the debt hold, the bond holders came to us and said, I think the interest on the debt, or the payment on the debt, was $56,000 a month. We weren't making, the church wasn't bringing that in on a monthly basis. So the bondholder said, okay, you know what, just how much can you pay? And they came up with a number, and they said, okay, and we'll negatively amortize the rest. So in other words, if they could only pay $40,000, then $16,000 would just be added to the principal. So they chose to do that for a while. And so then we became part of the leadership of the church, but long story short, as elders, we said, you know what, we cannot continue to do this. Our goal is not to have a mega church, first of all. We'll never be able to afford this debt. This debt was incurred by other men who are now gone and who have left. So what do we do? So the bondholders came to us and said, you know, what can you pay? And we said, this is how much we could pay. We had a particular percentage that we said, we are here to do ministry, not to service a debt. A big mistake was made before. We're not going to make that same kind of mistake again. And so there was a school that was originally tied to the church and that now had divided the church, and that we were on 20 acres. And so the school ended up buying 10 acres, and we were able to mortgage 10 acres, and we were able to give the bondholders 80 cents on the dollar, which didn't really make us happy, but it was better than totally defaulting. And we said, you know, here's the keys. We put it up for sale to try to get them the most amount of money possible. And so that nobody wanted to buy the church. And so that's the way that we ended up settling it, with an agreement that we would give to them our tax returns every year for the next 5 years. And if there was some kind of windfall, they said, Charles Barkley was part of the Phoenix Suns at the time. He said, well, you need to have Charles Barkley come here so you guys get more money. No, that's not the answer. But with the understanding that if in the next 5 years we had some kind of way to pay them back the other 20%, that we would do that. So again, we did all that we could. We chose not to continue to make additional mistakes. They wanted us to be about 60% of our income towards debt service, and we said, no way, we're not going to do that. We're about ministry, we're not about debt. So anyway, there's ways to do that. So limited debt, be able to have an appropriate amount, and that's going to be different for each person, and that's something that you need to think through and pray through. What is the right amount for you?
Was that an elder rule church when
yes.
that happened?
Yes. Well, technically, yes, okay. But it was one where the elders at the time were pretty much yes men.
Yes,
so the pastor drove everything, and they just agreed to whatever he wanted to do. And that's the problem with not being truly elder-led. Compound interest and APR affect debt and savings. So if you don't fully understand what annual percentage rate is, or APY, annual percentage yield on savings, I invite you to go to the internet and find out how it's calculated, because you may think that you're paying a 4 or 5 or 6% interest rate on something, when in fact it's really 8 or 9% because the APR, because you pay, some of you may have had the opportunity to pay points up front in a mortgage. Well, what you're really doing is buying down the interest rate, but you're really paying that higher interest rate. You're just giving them money up front for a lower interest rate later. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's important that you understand what the true cost of the money is that you're borrowing, because as you compound interest, and whether that interest is compounded daily, weekly, monthly, semi-annually, quarterly, annually, all of that has an effect on the total amount that you're paying. So take a look at it. There's lots of calculators on the internet that will let you do an amortization of a loan over a certain period of time, a certain interest rate, and X amount of dollars, and it will show you what you're eventually paying for that, and make sure that you understand that if there's a difference between the interest rate that's advertised and what the APR is, that you understand what that delta is and the actual true cost of that money before you enter into that agreement. Again, it's about being educated and understanding the cost of the dollar. Inflation increases the effect of debt. So as inflation gets higher, your money is worth less. And so you're paying with future dollars that are worth less. You can buy less with them. And so the cost of that to you is actually more from a living perspective as inflation increases. So make sure that you take that into consideration as well.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
As I understand it, inflation reduces the value of each dollar.
Yes.
So wouldn't having to pay the same amount of dollars when each dollar is worth less mean that inflation decreases the worth of your debt?
No, because you're paying with dollars. You're paying off an amount that the dollar is less than, is worth less to you today than it was yesterday. So the cost of you buying other things, gas, food, clothing, those kinds of things, is going to actually cost you more if there's a high rate of inflation. So you're spending more of your dollars to buy those things.
Inflation also has a generally increasing effect on how much you get paid.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. If you aren't, though, that means you're effectively getting a pay cut as a...
Yes, absolutely.
Not inflation, however, that's decreasing the worth that you're getting paid. It's whoever's paying you thinking that it's not worth giving you pay raises to accommodate inflation.
I would say both are true.
Okay.
And then defaulting on a loan and bankruptcy should be avoided whenever possible. Now, is it unbiblical to go through bankruptcy? That's a decision that you're going to have to think through. I would tend to say, no, I don't think it's unbiblical. I think if the laws provide for that, and you are within the law to do that because you've made bad decisions, I think that's something that you're going to have to think and pray through. The real purpose of this class is to try to help you so that you don't get in that situation to begin with. The reason that you're there is most likely because you have made a bad decision. Some of it might not be your own fault. You might both be working, and for whatever reason, both of you lose your job for an extended period of time, and you have to, and now you have to go through that. Circumstances could present that, but the point is to do all that you can to avoid that. So as an example, if you're going to buy a home, the more money that you can put down, the better off you're going to be from this perspective, in that, let's say that God presents you with that situation and now you have to give up your home. The ideal situation would be to be able to sell your home, even if it was a loss to you, for at least the amount that you owed, so that you could be faithful to the bank or whoever loaned you the money. yes, you're going to, let's say that you had a $200,000 house and you owed $150,000 on it, and you were able to, but and you put down $40,000 to begin with, and you have $10,000 in additional equity. So now, you know, you've got $50,000 worth of equity, but you owe $150,000. If that house can at least sell for $150,000, yes, you're going to lose your equity, but you're going to be faithful to the people that you borrowed from. So always try to put yourself in that position where you're never what they would consider upside down in the situation, so that if you have to sell their house and move someplace else, move in with family, move into an apartment, whatever it might be, that you are able to be faithful to the people who loaned you the money. All those things to consider when you're making decisions about borrowing money. Any other thoughts on debt and usury? What's the average interest rate on a credit card? 20-something percent, right? And let's say that you owed a few thousand dollars on it. Let's say you owed $5,000 on your credit card, paying 20-some percent interest rate on that, and you only paid the minimum payment. When would you pay off that? Never. So be careful about those kinds of things. Make sure that you understand all of those things. You know, to the degree that you need to use a credit card, try to get the lowest interest rate that you possibly can. And a credit card, especially look at the APR, because it's definitely going to be different than what the advertised rate is. Make sure that you understand what you're getting yourself into and that you're able to pay it off. The ideal situation would be to get into, if you want to use a credit card for some things, and you're able to, the ideal situation is if you found a credit card that paid you back money for when you put something on your credit card, and then you turned around and paid off your whole credit card, so you actually deducted that amount out of your checkbook every month, and that you were able to just pay that credit card in full, that's to your advantage. They're actually paying you for using that credit card because they're getting it from the vendors. But if you're not in that situation and you're using your credit card basically to live on, try not to just pay the minimum amount. Pay as much as you possibly can. Get rid of that debt as fast as you possibly can. 20% interest rate is huge. If you think about it, you know, on $10,000, that's $2,000 that you're paying above that $10,000. So it's not the best situation to be in. All right, any other thoughts on debt and usury? All right, let's talk about taxes. Matthew 17:24-27. Somebody have that?
When they came to Capernaum, those who collected the 2-drachma tax came to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the 2-drachma tax?" He said, "Yes." And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to them first, saying, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth collect customs or poll tax, from their sons or from strangers?" And Peter said, "From strangers." Jesus said to him, "Then the sons are exempt. However, so that we do not offend them, go to the sea and throw in a hook and take the first fish that comes up, and when you open its mouth, you will find a shekel. Take that and give it to them for you and me."
Don't you wish you could do that? Go find a fish and, hey, there's a $100 bill. My goodness. All right. This scripture is not as much a lesson on taxation as it is on Christian behavior. So we as Christians are called to humbly deny our own interests rather than to offend others, even in the area of taxation. Matthew 22:15-22 says, "Then the Pharisees went and plotted together how they might trap him in what he said. And they sent their disciples to him along with Herodians, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you are truthful and teach the way of God in truth and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any. Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not. But Jesus perceived their malice and said, "Why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the poll tax." And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said to him, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And hearing this, they were amazed, and leaving him, they went away. It's within God's will that all governments are formed and their leaders are placed in a position of authority over them and over the government. Christians are not to be the enemy to civil governments or their leaders. As residents of a state or a country, we are to abide by the laws of the land, which includes paying taxes legally levied by the government. So the lesson here was, don't focus on the things other than, focus only on the things that are of God, and don't worry about, basically what the government is saying about paying taxes, as long as there is proper representation and all of those kinds of things. But it's legal for them to do that, and to let God drive your thoughts about paying taxes. Mark 12, 13 through 17.
Then they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to him in order to trap him in a statement. They came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are truthful and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not? Shall we pay or shall we not pay?" But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said to them, "Why are you testing me? Bring me a denarius to look at. They brought one, and he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said to him, "Caesar's." And Jesus said to them, "Render to Caesar things that are Caesar's, and to God things that are God's." And they were amazed.
So this is Mark's account of the same situation, right? Almost word for word. Again, stressing that governments have a legitimate claim to taxation with representation. And the Pharisees were really just trying to trap him so that he would deny paying taxes to Caesar, so that then they could bring him before the Romans, and that he could be found guilty of going against what Caesar would have. Luke 20, 19 through 26 says, "The scribes and the chief priests tried to lay hands on him that very hour, and they feared the people, for they understood that he spoke this parable against them. So they watched him and sent spies who pretended to be righteous in order that they might catch him in some statement, so that they could deliver him to the rule and authority of the governor. They questioned him, saying, "Teacher, we know that you speak and teach correctly, and that you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But he detected their trickery and said to them, and we know what he said. So again, the context there says to give what the government requires is part of one's religious duties. So as Christians, when we're fairly taxed for the things of state, local, federal government, it's our duty to pay those taxes.
And the government is the man in authority, not the piece of paper, like the Constitution, right?
No. Well, it's the laws of the land, okay. Not the person. Right? So it would be the Constitution, it would be the federal tax code, the state tax code, whatever it might be. So I don't know of any situation where someone tries to tax you above and beyond what the law would say. Someone in government would try to do that. I don't know of a case of that. It might be.
Sounds like the obvious example would be tax collectors from Israel at the time of
Yes.
who would just basically abuse the position to take extra tax.
Yeah. So I don't think that we see that here so much. Although I don't know that it's intentional, but I think that particularly IRS or local or state government agencies that are in control of taxes, I think that they make mistakes. I remember a situation where we were living in California at the time, and I was still in the Navy and Marie was working, and so the state of California at that time did not tax military retirement. So we went to a CPA and had our taxes done, and they filed the taxes, and a couple years later we got a notification from the tax board that they were incorrectly filed and that we actually owed more money. So they didn't actually tax the military retirement, but they included the military retirement in the rate to figure out what the rate of the tax would be and then applied that rate to the taxable amount. So we went back to the CPA and said, hey, and he said, well, I didn't make a mistake. So we appealed. And it went on for quite a while. Not that we were not willing to pay. We were going to pay whatever it was. But we had to deal with different people from the tax board in California. And each time we talked to somebody, they gave us a different number. So even though there's rules and laws, sometimes they can't even figure out what the right rate would be. And so finally we were able to get some agreement as to what the amount should be, and we paid the tax and satisfied the requirement. But to your point, because different people were calculating it, they thought they were doing it right, but the laws were not clear. Romans 13, 1 through 8. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist and are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise for the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. So to give what the government requires is part of our religious duty, provided it does not violate God's command. So if there were to be some abortion tax levied or something that goes against the word of God, and you were required by the government to support that, that would be a violation, and therefore were to honor God's commands, and that would be probably the only case that we would not abide by what the government said if it truly violated God's word. So as Christians, we must recognize that the authority a government exercises has been given to it by God. Levying taxes is within the government's right, and paying taxes is a fundamental responsibility of us all as Christians. So in summary there, honor God's establishment of governments. Recognize that they would not be in power if it were not for him. Understand where tax money is spent. It's our duty to understand how taxes are spent. And you can have a voice in that, whether it's through elections or what have you, going to city council meetings or whatever you desire. But it's our responsibility to understand where it's spent. And therefore, we should participate in government elections. It's as Christians, we have a responsibility in this particular case of stewardship, and part of that is who's spending what, and knowing what each politician would, how they would spend their money and the things that they would support and not support. And so that should have an effect on the way that you choose to vote. Paying personal property tax and income taxes is our responsibility. As difficult as it is your responsibility. And then taxes on small business should be paid when due. I have seen many people, and even in the Christian community, to fall into this. I know of one case very well where the business is run by a Christian and he failed to pay his taxes. And so then the IRS came and audited, and it's not a testimony that you want to have. It's very easy to not pay taxes when you're a small business and you're running that yourself, and it's your responsibility to do that. When you are on a payroll, they automatically take out your taxes, and so you don't even have to think about it. But when you're a small business and you're paid by your customers, it's very easy to get yourself in a situation where you're not making a profit, and therefore the money that you are getting, you're using to pay other debts or to keep the business running, and now you fail to pay taxes. Don't get in that situation. It is not a good testimony, and you will pay a lot more in the end. If you are in that situation, whether it's your own personal property or for a small business, repay past due taxes as soon as possible. So if you get yourself in that situation, do all that you can to get out of that situation and make your payment and settle with what is due. Any questions on taxes?
Yes, I'm paying, not wanting to have some of your tax money go to an abortion clinic or whatever. If you're getting paid by an employer, how do you separate? The taxes are automatically taken out. How do you separate that? There's no way to really separate it.
No, well, the taxes that are taken out generally are either for federal taxes or state taxes that come out. And how those tax dollars are spent, you have little control over. But that's why I said earlier, the only way to really have any kind of say in how those things are being spent is to participate in elections and make sure that you understand the people that you're supporting and how they're going to vote. So fortunately, right now, you know, there's the Hyde Amendment in the United States that says federal money cannot be spent on abortions. That's obviously under attack right now. And so for me, I would want to support somebody in a federal elected position that would affirm that law. But you can, it's not really a tax, but more of a charitable contribution, where some charities that seem benign and seem to be very good on the surface are actually supporting things that are against what God would command. And I can think of one or two right now, which I won't mention, but it was that I learned, oh, they support abortions. I'm no longer going to contribute to that. So I just direct my charitable contribution somewhere else. So understand what you're paying for in that particular case. Other thoughts? Okay, next week, Jay is going to be talking about thinking about your future as before you start to build a resource allocation plan. And the thought here is, you know, as we have gone all along, thinking about God's sovereignty, our character, how we're spending our time, talents, and finances, things about benevolence and serving one another and debt and usury and taxes, all those kinds of things are leading up to thinking through all of those things before we really make a decision about our resource allocation plan, whether it's time, talents, or finances. So now we're going to talk about, or Jay's going to be talking about, are you thinking through issues about dependent parents? Are you thinking about things that are going to be required of you if you have a special needs child? Are you thinking about things that, what if one of the spouses dies, what's going to happen? So these are, he's going to be working through in Module 5 all of those kinds of things, and then in Module 6 we'll begin to talk about how to actually build a resource allocation plan. All right? So again, if you need one of these handouts for Module 5, make sure that you get one before you leave today. Any questions before we go? I appreciate the time that I've had with you, and appreciate your interest in becoming better biblical stewards of the things that God has entrusted to us. So let's pray.